It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Keep the families together. Why can't you find a way to still potentially...
Do you want the child in jail?
You keep the families together. Why don't you create a family detention center?
Well, we had those under President Obama, but the Democrats are holding up the funding to expand those. The president had a 70-point immigration plan. This was included in it, Chuck, that expanding, really doubling the detention center capacity, hiring more ICE agents. We don't have the capacity. Those brave men and women at the border who are trying to do their jobs as best they can. This is an issue. And if the Democrats are serious, and if a lot of Republicans are serious, they'll come together this year. They won't just talk about this week the Dreamers or just the wall or just catch and release. It's all of the above. And there are ways to repatriate these families back to their home countries expeditiously. But I want to make very clear, because thank you for saying nobody is arguing the kids aren't getting care. A lot of folks are pretending these kids aren't getting care. You have colleagues in your network who are analogizing this to concentration camps and the Nazis. What a disrespect, what an outrageous disrespect to the 6 million people who perished at that time.
Kellyanne Conway, as only Kellyanne Conway can respond to Chuck Todd of NBC. Sandy Rios with you. That's, of course, the big conversation. Yesterday, the left, i.e. Democrats, were using the whole concentration metaphor that we have got people in concentration camps and we're separating children from their parents. And this is all done under the Trump administration, of course. And it's on Father's Day, no less. So this is how it goes. You have to understand that we as a people are being constantly propagandized. What does that mean? That means that the way you think about things is being shaped on purpose by what we call narratives. So the narrative here is that this terrible, no good Donald Trump, who hates Mexicans and blacks now, we hear, of course, he's totally racist, is trying to hurt people of color. Now he's separating children from their parents, cruelly putting them in cages, and it's Father's Day, and, you know, fill in the blanks. It goes on and on and on. And people, for whatever reason, people from time immemorial have been susceptible to this. They believe, it's like the old game of gossip, you know. Somebody whispers something in your ear, you repeat it, and so they're not careful listeners and they're not careful repeaters. And so the facts get completely trashed in this and lost. And the issue of American sovereignty, the danger at our borders, the drug trafficking that's coming over, the real problem with criminals using children, for instance, as a decoy in order to get into the country, the problem of putting children through that at all, trying to put them at risk as parents, which is the responsibility of those bringing them over, that never gets discussed. But we're going to talk about this today and the larger issue of the fact that Congress is going to be addressing a new immigration bill this week. I've been talking to you about it repeatedly, but it's going to be happening this week. They're going to be taking a vote in the House on Thursday on one of two bills. And the president signaled on Friday that he would not sign the more moderate bill. But then the White House staff rushed to clarify, oh, no, he didn't mean that. Oh, no, the president didn't mean that. He's going to fully support both bills. That's what they told us on Friday. Well, we're going to talk about that with Chris Chmielinski, who is the vice president of Numbers USA, and we're going to do that in just a minute. But, of course, the huge news that came last Thursday night was the release of the Inspector General's report, the 500-plus page report, on how the FBI and the Justice Department handled the investigation into Mrs. Clinton's email. And you heard probably that there just wasn't any evidence that the president, that the FBI or the Justice Department, that any potential bias affected anything that they did in the investigation. I want to read to you something from an insider. It says, read but don't focus on the executive summary or conclusions. Those two sections were written by political administrators in the FBI and DOJ leadership. The substance of the documented facts, you'll note that the specific facts do not support the summary conclusion. And so now the big argument is that most journalists haven't read the report. It takes 30 hours to read it. Many are saying Christopher Wray, the FBI director current, when he made his statement, made a fool out of himself because he, too, has not read the report. The executive summary is very misleading. Well, I'll just say dishonest. It's written again by political administrators. What does that mean? That means political operatives, people who think politically. So they have soft-soaped the actual text of the executive summary, in which there are many damning illustrations, and I'm hoping to go into some of them with you, of what FBI, at least we know FBI agents, Justice Department officials did not maintain their email. We don't know so much about them, but the FBI is being, they're being excoriated for their role. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be, but Justice Department covered themselves a little bit better than the FBI did. I want you to hear yesterday, because I've talked about Trey Gowdy so much and in disparaging him, because I've told you that he says some really great things and then does not follow up, and that's the problem. Well, he was on his game yesterday with Chris Wallace, and I think that his interactions with Chris will tell us a lot. Now, Chris Wallace, of course, is not, let's just say he's not a conservative. He's always on the law. The Democrats, whatever he is, he is certainly not a conservative. And this is how the show began. I want you to listen to see how Chris, this is what I talk about, mind manipulation. Every reporter, people do this. I'm a commentator. I tell you what I think, I don't hide that. But a news person is not supposed to do that. But Chris, has his own agenda, and this is how he started his show yesterday. Let's listen.
President Trump uses the Justice Department's Inspector General report to attack the FBI and claim vindication.
I think Comey was the ringleader of this whole, den of thieves. They were plotting against my election.
We'll discuss the fallout from the findings and what it means for the Mueller special counsel investigation with Congressman Trey Gowdy, chair of the House Oversight Committee.
All right, so that's how it starts. And, of course, Chris has this expectation because Trey Gowdy last week made some comments, Trump is not the object of this investigation. Oh, Mueller, always saying Mueller has such integrity and Comey, we just have to wait for the evidence. He's really a good guy. This is what Congressman Gowdy's been telling us. He also told us that there was no spy in the Trump campaign. So he got some pushback from that last week, I'm quite certain. So I think you might find it surprising. I'm sure Chris Wallace would find it surprising. Trey Gowdy, let's listen to the first question.
President Trump is back from his summit with North Korea's Kim Jong-un and is already taking on his next big challenge. The Department of Justice Inspector General issued a report that is sharply critical of how the FBI conducted the Clinton email investigation. And the president says that undercuts Robert Mueller's probe of collusion with Russia and obstruction of justice. Joining me now from South Carolina, Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy, chair of the House Oversight Committee. Mr. Chairman, before we get to the IG report, I want to discuss how President Trump and his lead lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, are using the IG report. Here's the president linking what the inspector general found in the Clinton investigation to the Mueller investigation of him.
I think that the report yesterday, maybe more importantly than anything, it totally exonerates me. There was no collusion. There was no obstruction.
Mr. Chairman, does the IG report exonerate President Trump?
Well, it certainly helps him, Chris. I mean, keep in mind, the same people, the same players that were involved in the Clinton probe later moved to the Russia probe. John Brennan, who said he should be in the dustbin of history. Jim Comey, who said impeachment was too good of a remedy. Loretta Lynch, who wanted Hillary Clinton to win. And then we've got Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, the two FBI employees. Chris, and this is what's most important to me. Those two presumed and pronounced Hillary Clinton's innocence before her investigation ended, and they presumed and pronounced Donald Trump's guilt before the investigation even began. So when you have that pervasiveness of bias, yes, it's going to help the person who is complaining about the investigation.
On the other hand, Robert Mueller was not part of the Clinton investigation. Peter Strzok was fired by Mueller as soon as he found out about those very biased and damaging texts. And, of course, we don't know what Mueller has found in the last year in his investigation. So, I have to ask, has President Trump been exonerated? I clearly understand your point that there was bias in the FBI, but has he been exonerated on allegations of collusion and obstruction?
Well, part of that depends upon what you view the Mueller probe as. Now, you mentioned collusion. The only person in the universe who claims to have evidence of collusion is Adam Schiff. And unlike any other secret he's ever had, he's actually kept this one. He's never told anyone what evidence he has. So there's no evidence of collusion. Obstruction of justice? Chris, good luck having your star witness being Jim Comey in any prosecution, from shoplifting to obstruction of justice. Good luck if that's your star witness. For me, the Mueller probe is about what Russia did in 2016 and who, if anyone, they did it with. So that's what I mean when I say Mueller probe. And I hope he does write the definitive accounting of what Russia did. But there's no evidence Donald Trump did it with them. And Jim Comey would be about the sorriest witness that I can imagine a prosecutor could have.
Okay. All right. So I apologize to the listeners this morning. I don't know what's going on. I'm not able to connect to the studio, actually, either on the online, Adam, just so you know that. All right. So Chris Wallace has this back and forth with Trey Gowdy, and I think he's very surprised at how Trey Gowdy responds to him. He's expecting a very different response. Well, I'll just move on. Just in case, Kimberly Stossel probably is one of the best people following this right now. There's tons of people following that I really trust, but Kim's one of them. She says that the report found insubordination bias in the FBI, and that she said this is just the current FBI and justice leadership can no longer justify its refusal to come clean on its other actions. A neutral arbiter has found that they made a hash of the Clinton investigation, and it is a hash. And there's so much to say about this, it's hard for me to know where to start. I have to say, I have not spent 30 hours reading the report, but I've spent a lot of time reading reports from people that I really do trust, and that's what I want to talk to you about this morning as best I can. Today, the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, who prepared this report, along with FBI Director Christopher Wray, is going to appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee. That's today at 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. But here's the thing. You know, after Christopher Wray, the current FBI director's statement on Friday.
Oh, yes. All right. Are we back on with the mic? All right. So talking about, oh, you are a very patient audience. My ears are now burning. But let's just say that Christopher Wray and Inspector General Michael Horowitz will be testifying today at 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And, you know, it's generally, usually, in these cases, a dog and pony show. We saw what Christopher Wray said on Friday. He really disgraced himself by denigrating this report and kind of making excuses for the FBI and not giving confidence to any of us going into the future. But I have to say, the Inspector General is not done with the reporting. Congress, you should hear what they're saying about how they're going to hold Rod Rosenstein. There are actually conversations about impeaching him, Rod Rosenstein. It's pretty amazing. Rather than this report having things back off, I think it has turned up the burner. But for a second, we're going to digress and go back to what's happening with the immigration bills because it's so important and it's happening this week. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for a healthcare plan, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2.5 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings may be less or more, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, Think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. Just hit *345. That's *345. *345.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've seen God open up so many doors for us to help serve and love those who get affected by a natural disaster.
As the trees and the wind started crashing down around us, my wife was, of course, very diligently praying, you know, Lord, please be with us.
Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others.
I see these volunteers all as a gift from God.
And I'm just grateful they're here, you know, helping out. It's a blessing.
If you're interested in becoming a part of what God's doing through 8 Days of Hope, please go to 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address.
I've noticed that whenever there's a time in my life when things might be a little gloomy, the number one thing that I can do is to go serve somebody.
And I would encourage anyone else to, it's worth it. Come out and do it next time if you didn't make it to this one. And the Father will really bless you in it.
Thank you so much for your prayers and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really, honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
For the past 6 years, Jack Phillips has been attacked by a well-organized mob of militant LGBT activists. Jack is the owner of the Masterpiece Cake Shop in Lakewood, Colorado. He is also a devout Christian. He made national headlines when he declined to bake a cake for a gay wedding ceremony. He was compared to a Nazi and a slave owner, subjected to death threats and boycotts. The Colorado Civil Rights Commission found him guilty of discrimination, called his Christian faith despicable. But after 6 years of relentless attacks, Jack Phillips has been vindicated. The Supreme Court ruled 7-2 in his favor, declaring the state Civil Rights Commission was hostile to religion and violated the Constitution's protection of religious freedom. It was a good day for religious liberty in America, but the fight goes on, and we must be watchmen on the wall, forever diligent in the battle to protect and defend our nation's first freedom. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The zero tolerance policy means zero humanity, and it makes zero sense.
It's a disgrace, it's shameful, and it's un-American.
This is a choice that the Trump administration has made. It is inhumane. It is cruel.
President Trump, cease and desist, because you are moving the arc of justice to the heap of despair.
That is appalling, and it is un-American.
Okay, so that's a Democrat congressman over the weekend turning up the burner on the propaganda. And as I said, that this is an effort to mold Americans' minds to create sympathy, which you would have. Of course you would have sympathy for children separated from their parents. It's that is not the point. They play on your genuine, rightful emotions, but they twist the facts and come to the conclusion that they want you to come to, which is that America is terrible. To try to have a wall, a border, to try to have some distinction, to protect its own citizens from criminal drug smugglers, also from just providing school and education and food and health care for their own children. Somehow that is immoral, that we try to protect our borders, as every other country on the planet does. All right, well, so the burner's being turned up on that, but also at the same time, there is a bill moving through the House. The Senate has signaled, two bills actually, the Senate has signaled that if, you know, McConnell has told us that if they can get a bill the president likes, he'll help with that. So we are facing an impending problem that we've been fighting for more than 20 years about an immigration bill that suits business interests, creates cheap labor, but does not help the American people. Is this not why probably President Trump won the election? What most a lot of us are seeing about the breakdown of this country, Well, all right. I could go on and on, but I don't want to because Chris Chmielinski is the vice president and deputy director of Numbers USA. They are the number one fighter on this issue, and I've asked Chris to join us this morning. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure, and I appreciate you joining me. Let me just say, first of all, Chris, I don't want us to spend all of our time on this children separated from their parents issue, but it has to be addressed. So could you please, what's happening? Children being put in cages under Donald Trump and forcefully separated from their parents, and what's happening?
Yeah, well, no, they're not being put in cages. Some of those pictures that were floating around on social media and stuff have all been disproven as you know, falsified images. But, you know, what the administration here is trying to do, there are folks from Central America and from other countries that are taking advantage of our laws, and what our laws are is that you cannot detain children who are caught illegally crossing the border. So adults who want to illegally enter the United States, they cross the border with children, knowing that, at least under the Obama administration, because they're with a child, they're going to get released into the interior of the United States with a notice to appear in court. Well, because Jeff Sessions has announced a zero-tolerance policy where everybody gets prosecuted and crossing the border illegally is a crime, this does not affect folks who are coming to the border and claiming asylum. It only impacts people crossing the border illegally. So they're being apprehended by Border Patrol. If they happen to be with a child, then yes, they are putting the children in the care of Health and Human Services, which puts them into temporary living arrangements that they have down on the border. You know, the kids are getting fed, they're getting new clothes, they're getting showers, they're getting nice beds, they're getting recreation time, education, things like that, while the parents go through the process of being prosecuted for the crime that they committed. Just like me, if I were an American citizen, I have two kids. If I were arrested for a crime, I would be separated from my children. Now, granted, my children would get to stay at my house, but, you know, I would get brought to the local jail, depending on the level, the severity of the crime. So they're just following the same process. And again, it's only impacting folks that are caught crossing the border illegally. It's not impacting, or at least it's not supposed to impact folks that have claimed asylum.
All right. Well, we could spend a lot of time on that, but I want to move to the legislation. Chris, I've talked about this a lot with my audience, so they're not ignorant of the basic facts here. We've been talking a great deal about these two bills, the Goodlatte bill and the compromise bill that Paul Ryan first studied. Oh, he feigned innocence that he does. He wouldn't want DACA legalized, even though he's been pushing for that for months and trying to legalize illegal immigrants for all the years he's been serving in Congress. But the question here is the president. The president said Friday that of these two bills, he would not support the more moderate bill, which led a lot of us to believe he was going to support the Goodlatte bill. He also tweeted out, this is the 18th, he tweeted out on the 15th, the Democrats are forcing the breakup of families at the border and their horrible and cruel legislative agenda. Any immigration bill must have full funding for the wall, in catch and release, visa lottery and chain, and go to merit-based immigration. So that's what the president said most currently that I know about. We heard a clarification from the White House on Friday after the president made his comments on Fox and Friends that the president would support both of these bills fully. All right. So, Chris, what's going on here? Do we have any idea for what the president is going to support and what he isn't? And also, is the Goodlatte bill even acceptable to those of us that are concerned about illegal immigrants coming without restraint into this country?
Yeah, well, I'll address the first part. You mentioned what President Trump ran on back in 2016 when he was first running for president. And the platform that he ran on was an anti-amnesty, pro-American worker platform when it comes to immigration. And that seems to be what his gut reaction is. So when he was asked that question on live television on Friday morning, would you support the moderate bill or would you support the Goodlatte bill? And he said he would not sign the moderate bill. I think that was his gut reaction. That's really what he wants to do. But he's surrounded by advisors who have been working with House leadership for the last several weeks. And of course, they walked back the comments and said, no, 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 no. President supports both bills. And then they've you know, apparently gotten him into line, even though it does go against, again, what he campaigns on to the American people. So you have two proposals. The Good Lap bill, it does offer an amnesty, but it also significantly reduces legal immigration, which is going to take the pressure off of American workers from foreign workers who come into the country through our legal immigration system and compete with them for jobs and increasing wages. So Numbers USA has actually endorsed the Good Lap bill as it was introduced. Again, it does have a small amnesty in it, but I'm going to emphasize small. It is limited to the 690,000 current DACA recipients, and that's something that can be defined. That's a defined group. We know who those illegal aliens living in the United States are because they've already gone through the process and they've been given work permits and deferred status through the Department of Homeland Security. Speaker Ryan's bill would expand the pool to, illegal aliens that fall within this parameter. So they're saying it could impact, or they expect it to impact, 1.8 million. But we've seen estimates as high as 3-4 million people that it could impact. And then, of course, fraud can come into play, and anybody who claims to meet some of those requirements hands off for enforcement until their whole process is that their application is adjudicated. So it's a much, much larger process, or much, much larger amnesty. The Good Lap bill has some great enforcement measures that will try to get rid of some of the loopholes that exist along the border that the Kerik banned a couple of months ago, some of the loopholes in our immigration laws that they were taking advantage of. The biggest thing that we're supportive of in the Good Lap bill that's not in Speaker Ryan's bill is, of course, mandatory E-Verify. That would require all employers to verify the status, the worker eligibility of their new hires to make sure they're actually legally authorized to work in the United States and not in the country illegally and trying to take jobs illegally. That's a huge thing for us. We think that's the number one way to stop future illegal immigration is mandatory E-Verify. If you cut off the jobs magnet, at the end of the day, that's why people come here illegally, because they know they can work.
Right.
Paul Ryan has no interest in cutting off the illegal labor force for business owners. So, of course, he's, you know, hasn't put mandatory E-Verify into the bill and hasn't put a lot of the border security revisions and other interior enforcement provisions that the Good Lap bill has into his bill.
All right. So, but I have to say that this is even a compromise for Numbers USA to embrace Good Lap. I think that you guys took a big step to say we could live with that. If and also my understanding, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, the 690,000 identified DACA recipients that have been previously identified would not have a path to citizenship. They just have legal status. Is that correct?
That's right. They would get renewable status. It's indefinitely renewable. So as long as they don't violate any laws while they're here, they'll be able to continue to renew that process every year, 3 years. But again, as you said, it's a huge compromise for us. In our 21-plus year history, this is the first time that we've ever endorsed a bill that does have an amnesty in it. And the reason why is we look at it for a couple of different reasons. The number one reason is first, the amnesty goes to, as I said earlier, a defined group. We know who these 690,000 folks are. The second thing is those 690,000 folks already have work permits, and many of them have been working, competing against American workers for the last 5 or 6 years. So the damage there is already done. It's not going to increase if the Good Lap bill should become law. But the most important thing, I was just going to want to say it fully repeals chain migration and ends the visa lottery.
Yeah.
And the effect of that would be reducing about 300,000 green cards each year.
It's funny because I was listening to NPR on Saturday, and of course they did this whole story about a guy who won the visa lottery, and a very sympathetic story, of course. And then of course kept mentioning that this one bad bill, the Good Lap bill, they didn't mention the name, was going to eliminate the visa lottery. But that's like 1 million people that come in every year, I think, isn't it, on the lottery?
Well, 1 million people come in through our legal immigration system, but only 50,000 come in through the lottery. So it's a very, very small drop in the bucket.
All right, but before we run out of time, I have not allowed you to expand this. The nuts and bolts of what's happening in the House is that the, I'd say, liberal Republicans, always people say moderate, that's not true. Liberal Republicans have gotten together this discharge petition. They were two signatures short last week. They have allegedly been held off because they have agreed, everyone, even conservatives, have agreed to these two votes, one on the Good Lad and one on the Ryan compromise bill. Is that discharge petition, you think, truly dead because the vote's coming up on Thursday?
So as long as the votes actually occur on Thursday, the discharge petition will be gone because the rule for the votes that the House, through House procedure, they have to have a vote on a rule to begin debate on the two bills in the first place. The rule will have a provision in it that will kill the discharge petition. So as long as the rule passes, and most rules usually do pass, as long as the rule passes, it should disarm the discharge petition for good, and as long as we have both votes. It looks like both votes, both bills right now are going to be short of the 218 they need to pass, but you never know. It'll be interesting to see how many arms both the White House and House leadership is going to try to twist over the next couple of days before the vote.
Yeah, so this is all very tricky because just to kind of put it in layman's language, the conservatives in the House need to have these votes in order to get rid of the discharge petition, because the discharge petition would allow, I think, 25, something like that, Republicans to join with all the Democrats to pass a really bad bill. That's what they're trying to stop. So by doing that, then they have to vote on these two other bills. And what you're saying, Chris, is that neither of these bills, neither the Good Lat, which you guys, Numbers USA, is supporting, nor the Ryan Compromise, have the 218 votes necessary to pass, at least today. But we don't know what's going to happen with the White House. And we really don't know what's going to happen with the White House with all the confusion as of Friday and over the weekend about if President Trump is going to weigh in on these. And I don't think anyone knows. Do you have a crystal ball there? Do you have any idea?
I wish I did. And obviously, if I had a personal preference, the Good Lat bill would pass and the other one would fail. Speaker Ryan's bill would fail. But as you called them, and I agree with you, the more liberal Republicans, they're going to oppose the Good Lat bill, and no Democrats are going to support it. So that's not going to get to 218. Unfortunately, we pretty much know that for sure. No Democrats are going to support Speaker Ryan's bill because it does include $25 billion appropriation for building the border fence, which they all oppose. So the big question is going to be whether about the 20 to 25 Republicans who in principle oppose all amnesties, whether or not they're going to stick to their guns and oppose the Speaker Ryan bill. And then again, as I said, it just comes down to how much pressure is the White House and House leadership going to put on them to support this. At the end of the day, I tend to think that both of them are going to end up failing. So,
yeah, and that's, to me, very good news, I have to say. Very good news for a number
Absolutely.
Of reasons, which we can't get into yet. But Chris, we just have a minute left. What
Sure.
can people do, and what should they do today? I'm guessing they should call their congressperson, if they are agreeing with our conversation here, and ask them to vote for the Good Lat bill.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. And not just vote for the Good Lat bill, but to vote against Speaker Ryan's bill. You know, one thing that I haven't mentioned, the Gang of Eight bill, 2013, it offered amnesty first with promises of enforcement later. That's exactly what the Ryan bill does. They get the amnesty on day one, and then there are promises for enforcement. And if for some reason the enforcement doesn't go through, there are triggers to prevent the path to citizenship, but it doesn't matter because the 1.8 illegal aliens already have their legal status and work permits that they can renew indefinitely.
Chris,
so
you,
the
they would,
comes first.
Paul Ryan would never do that. The leadership would fool the American people and make them think one thing while doing another. Dare you? Chris, we got to go.
Call your House members and tell them to oppose the Ryan bill.
Yeah, oppose the Ryan.
That would be the best piece of advice.
Okay, oppose the Ryan amnesty bill. Chris Chmielinski, Vice President and Deputy Director of Numbers USA. Chris, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, my pleasure. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In this portion of Scripture, Jesus announced at the onset that he and his disciples were going to the other side. Yet when the storm arose, the disciples feared, but Jesus slept. It's a perfect picture of the peace available to us when we realize we are not alone. Jesus is on board. Though storms may rage externally, we don't have to allow them to rage internally. Besides, Jesus has already assured us of our destination.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
In a democratic republic such as America, the hard work of democracy is done by the people. At the Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C., September 21st through the 23rd, you'll be equipped to take up the battle for human life, strong religious liberty, and thriving families by strong conservative leaders. The Values Voter Summit is sponsored in part by AFA Action. Visit valuesvotersummit.org to register and obtain more information about the summit. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Hey family, this is Lauren from Living Life with Lauren, and I want you to know just how much I appreciate you, and I count it an honor and a privilege to bring you interviews weekly with godly speakers, teachers, and authors that point us all to a closer walk with Jesus. Thank you for listening, telling your friends, downloading our podcast, and of course, connecting with me on Facebook, Living Life with Lauren, and Lauren Kitchen Stewart. I would love to hear from you. We're heard every Saturday evening at 8 Central Time on American Family Radio. Join us.
One of my favorite things to do in Israel is take a boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. Hello everyone, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be taking our annual tour of Israel in March of 2019, but it's time to sign up. We have a lot of folks sign up early, and last year, in fact, we filled up several months in advance. So for all the information on this trip to Israel, a bucket list trip for most people, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. Or for a free brochure, call us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your phone number. We'll be flying direct from the States to Tel Aviv and then begin our tour in Jerusalem of Israel. We hope you can join us in 2019.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Official Washington is known as the swamp, mostly because of the kind of people who are attracted to it. I've studied them closely over nearly 50 years here, and it's not for the faint of heart. Even in a less unsavory population, one man would be a standout. In the swamp, though, he has been the gold standard for professional excellence, for integrity, and for courage. His name, of course, is Charles Krauthammer. For decades, he's been the ultimate TV pundit, a brilliant author and columnist revered for his ability to communicate lucidly, wittily, and powerfully even the most complex of ideas, the most inside of political baseball, the most personal of subjects. Charles has said his goodbye at the end of a life of immense pain and great grace. Now we must sorrowfully say ours. Farewell, Dr. Krauthammer. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Most of the headlines today have been focused on Jim Comey, and there's no question that this was a very damning indictment of his leadership while he was there. But then again, Democrats and a lot in the media would like to pin it all on him. What struck me was that this report was a searing indictment of the entire FBI and its culture. And in particular, this argument that they tend to live by a rule that they themselves craft, that they impose rules on everyone else, but they do not live by them. So, I mean, we have examples in here of, you know, employees using their home computers and cell phones for work business. We found out that Comey's entire staff was complicit in helping him conceal from his Department of Justice superiors the contents of that July press conference about Hillary Clinton. We have unauthorized contacts with the press. We have an assistant attorney general, Peter Kadzik, who not only was tipping off the Clinton team about internal things while he was working on the investigation, but then when he was made to recuse himself, did not abide by the recusal. We've got Andrew McCabe leaking and then lying about it to the FBI agents who questioned him. So this is a widespread problem, at least in the leadership across the FBI, and that was an important aspect of this report that's being missed.
Kim Strassel of the Wall Street Journal. I told you she's been one of the reporters that's been all over this. There have been several, but Kim, I think, is a trustworthy source. And by the way, she has this great article in the Wall Street Journal, which we'll put on our Facebook page so that you can actually read and share it. Now, here's the thing to remember. I said this in the first segment, but because the first segment was a little bit of a challenge, perhaps you didn't hear it. This executive summary, which many in the press and also Christopher Wray in a statement on Friday claimed there's just nothing to see here. There is no evidence that there are any of this kind of bias affected the investigation in any way. It's just foolish. The body of the report shows exactly that. And in the time that I have remaining, I'm going to give you some examples of that. And the people that I know are saying Christopher Wray obviously did not read that report. That executive summary was a bait and switch. It was written by political administrators at the FBI and the DOJ, written so that people who don't read the entire 500-plus pages will walk away and say, they said there's no evidence that it affected anything. Well, let me just tell you, that can't possibly be true. Now, I want to go back to this Chris Wallace and Trey Gowdy interaction on Fox News Sunday, because Trey, I feel like I want to do this, especially because I hit him so hard in the last few days. And honestly, this doesn't mean Trey Gowdy's going to do the right thing. I've seen it happen too many times where he says great things. He has such great insights. And then he flips a switch and he's another person. And that's what happened with Chris Wallace. Chris was just absolutely flummoxed when he started asking Trey Gowdy questions, and Trey was coming down appallingly in a different place than Chris Wallace thought he was going to come down on. And we're going to go on with this exchange with them because Trey really does have a great way with words. I want you to hear what he had to say. Chris Wallace asks him at this a hearing where the IG will be talking today, what will be asked? And this is other question. Clip
you on. Are co-chairing a hearing on Tuesday where the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, who issued this damaging report, will appear. What are the main questions you want to ask him?
Well, there are a bunch. It's a 500-page report. And the good news, Chris, is Michael Horowitz proved what we wanted the FBI and the DOJ to do, which is that you can have an investigation that is fact-centric and fair and even-handed. There are a lot of questions I have for him. Number one, you know, the Hillary Clinton failure to prosecute was predicated upon two things. Number one, that her emails were not exposed to foreign actors. There's some evidence that that's not true. Number two, that there was no evidence of intent. Well, of course, there's no evidence of intent. You didn't bother to ask her. You went into the interview knowing that she was not going to be charged. So I think some members will ask about that. A lot of members are going to ask about the bias. The same team that exonerated her implicated him before the investigation began. And I suspect some members will ask about the coziness between the FBI and the media.
All right, so that's the first part of that. I misspoke, because the hearing today is before the Senate Judiciary Committee. That's a separate hearing that's going to take place Tuesday in the House. All right, so then Chris Wallace goes on about the whole comment about prejudging and bias. You have to hear this. Let's listen.
While the FBI is very critical, as you pointed out, and we're going to get into it in more detail about actions taken by Comey and Strzok and others, here is his overall judgment on the final conclusion of the Clinton investigation. I want to put this up on the screen. This is from the IG. We found no evidence that the conclusions by the prosecutors were affected by bias or other improper considerations. Rather, we determined that they were based on the prosecutor's assessment of the facts, the law, and past department practice. And here is current FBI Director Christopher Wray.
This report did not find any evidence of political bias or improper considerations actually impacting the investigation under review.
So when they say the final judgments, yes, there may have been bias, but that didn't affect the final judgments, are the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, and Christopher Wray, the current FBI director, are they wrong?
Cliffhanger, 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 and then Trey Gowdy responds. Let's listen.
Well, I'll say this. Why did Loretta Lynch ask it to be called a matter and not an investigation? Why was Cheryl Mills in the room when the target was being interviewed? Why did you write an exoneration memo 6 weeks before she was interviewed? Why did you start planning your press conference 2 months before the investigation was over? Here's where I depart from Chris Wray. I don't think it's my job to prove the bias impacted the investigation. I think it's his job to prove that it did not. Here's what I know. They exonerated her before the interview. They said she did nothing wrong before they even bothered to talk to her. And this same group said Donald Trump should not be the president and or should be impeached before the investigation even began. If that is not textbook bias, which is the prejudging of an outcome, I mean, that's what bias is. We are prejudging the outcome. We're prejudging her innocence before we talk to her. We're prejudging his guilt before we even begin to look into the fact pattern. That's bias, and yes, it impacted the outcome. The most important element is intent. That's what they all told us. She did not have the intent to commit a crime. The best way to figure that out is to talk to her. But they went into the interview, Chris, saying the only thing she'll be charged with is maybe lying to us. If you're Donald Trump, or if you're any other defendant in the country, how would you like that deal? We're not going to charge you with anything as long as you tell us the truth. That is blanket immunity, and everyone in the country would like that as they go into an interview with the FBI.
All right, so let's just say that Chris Wallace had kind of a deer in the headlights look, and he was stunned throughout throughout that whole segment when he went to the panel. I kind of enjoyed it, to be honest with you. I sort of did. And I hope Trey Gowdy will find his moorings and stick with his words, like act, not just talk. So anyway, that was the interaction, but there's more to say here. Now, I want to flesh this out a little bit. One of the many, many things that has come out of this report is that there was a conversation between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, the two FBI employees. Peter Strzok was in charge of the Russian collusion investigation as well as the Clinton email investigation. Lisa Page was an attorney working in the office of Andrew McCabe, and they were lovers, as you well know. Well, we saw a lot of their email. We talked about it. We've talked about how shocked they were, how much they hated Donald Trump. But there was a message that was never seen before the IG report came out. And it went, this is part of it. This is Lisa Page. Trump is never, ever going to become president, right? Right? Lisa Page texted her lover, Peter Strzok. No, says Peter. No, he's not. We'll stop it. All right. Now, here's the thing about that text. That text was brought to the attention of Rod Rosenstein, I believe, in June. The inspector general was alarmed by it. And would you believe that somehow that text got expunged from anything that was given to Congress? No one has ever seen it before the inspector general's report. So there are a lot of questions about that. Well, that's not national security. Why did you leave that out? Who decided to redact that? It wasn't redacted. It was just eliminated completely. And so that's a huge thing. And also, he's not, we'll stop it. Who's going to stop it? So they're going to stop Donald Trump from being president. Meanwhile, so many other things about, hang on just a second. I've got a lot of information here. I want to show you just the most important things that I think you will benefit from. All right, here is from what's called The Last Refuge. This is a guy who's worked, I don't even know what his name is, but he's, because he doesn't tell you. He's worked inside the intelligence departments for a number of years. I often quote him. He calls himself Sundance. And he says this, on page 12 of the IG report, the Department of Justice Officer of Inspector General highlights numerous FBI officials who accepted bribes from multiple media outlets. It goes on to say that they got tickets to sporting events, golf outings, drinks and meals, as well as exclusive invitations and admission to non-public social events. Well, what does that mean? Well, let me just say that there are very strong rules and regulations about public figures, especially in law enforcement, taking any kind of bribe, becoming friends with someone, who's part of your investigation and accepting tickets or go out for dinner or anything, a gift of any kind. The FBI policy is so strong on that. And they found that not only were FBI officials across the board so many that they said they couldn't even track how many in order to figure out where now leaks were coming from. Because all these FBI persons were partying, having fun with, playing with, and leaking to the media. It was absolutely out of control. So in regard to, let's see, newly revealed messages, some of the 40,000 that the Inspector General reviewed in total appear to be the most explicit texts so far made public. And then CNBC says Mueller removed Stroke from his staff after he became aware of the texts. Page departed Mueller's staff shortly before the first anti-Trump text exchanges between the two were made public. But here's the thing. This is how they cover it, as though Mueller immediately removed them and that makes it okay. Peter Strzok is still at the FBI. Lisa Page, I think, I'm not sure if she stepped down or not. I'm not sure. I thought I heard that she's resigned, but I'm not sure. Strzok's attorney says this: after a year-long investigation that included a review of millions of communications and interviews of scores of witnesses, the IG concluded that there is no evidence that the political views of Special Agent Strzok and others in the FBI impacted the handling of the Clinton email investigation. Well, that's ridiculous, because we know that Mrs. Clinton was not seriously interrogated. That's what Trey Gowdy is referring to. It was a total sham. One of the agents that was in that interview said, she was not telling the truth. It strained credulity. We could not believe what she was saying. And so she led them down the primrose path. They didn't. And one agent said, they quoted him as saying, I can't remember his exact words, but the bottom line was, it's a terrible thing to be forced to do something that you don't want to do. In other words, interrogating Mrs. Clinton. He didn't want to do it. And then he texted his wife later, and just so you know, I'm with her. Remember, that was a Hillary Clinton campaign phrase. The instances of bias are just absolutely astounding. And remember that they decided not to prosecute the guy that handled all of Mrs. Clinton's email and moved them from one server to the next. They let him plead immunity. And then he told them everything, but then he had already pled immunity. With Cheryl Mills and the other staffer for Mrs. Clinton, they actually gave them back their laptops, didn't even look in them. Plus, the other thing that's been reported is that the New York office investigating Anthony Weiner, when his latest charges of child pornography, whatever it was, and they got into his laptop and they found thousands and thousands and thousands of Mrs. Clinton's email that Huma Abedin, the wife of Anthony Weiner, had downloaded on the laptop. They were dogged in their pursuit. They got it to the FBI. They expected the FBI to get right back to them, but they didn't. They did not get back to them. They slow walked it. They never really investigated that. And James Comey's defense of it was that he said he didn't realize that Anthony Weiner was married to Huma Abedin. That was the reason he didn't look into it. Do you understand? I've just given you just a taste. Because there's so much more to say about this. But anyone who thinks that the bias of these FBI employees, not all of them, but of five, six, however many of them that they've enumerated here, who were in charge of these investigations at the very highest levels of the FBI, absolutely did go after Donald Trump with a vengeance and turn a blind eye to Hillary Clinton. You bet they had a horse in the game and they put their money on the wrong horse. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.